When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi voice app calling, offers 365 and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast. If you're joining us live on YouTube today, please join us in the chat room with any questions you might have. I'm joined today from Cape Town by Jonathan Ovadia, co-founder and CEO of OVEX, a relatively new cryptocurrency exchange that's backed by the likes of Vinnie Lingham, the founder of Civic, and Lou Klassen, the executive director at the Bitcoin Foundation. Jonathan, first of all, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for joining Tech Central today.
Hi, Duncan. Thanks for having me.
So, Jonathan, what's your background, and how did the idea for OVEX come about?
Yeah, sure. So I've always been very involved in technology. Before this, I was playing two roles. I was at one running a software consulting firm, and we were building an on-demand delivery app, a grocery delivery app. So basically, if you want to buy food from your local grocery store, but you don't want to go there and pick it up, you'd open up the app, you'd order it. Someone in the store, positioned in the store, would go collect all the goods, and it would be delivered to you. And that app was called Magic. And we're building that in partnership with Y Group, the fintech mobile payments company. Mm-hmm. And while I was doing that, I was also running a consulting company. And I had a lot of clients coming up to me, especially in 2017, with crypto ideas. And one, it was more of a partner than a client, wanted to build an exchange. And they asked if I could help build the exchange for them. And then I started building it and got really passionate about the project. And that client could see that I really knew what I was doing. I was really excited about it and offered to basically step aside and let me take it. And I was very passionate about it. So I withdrew my position in the delivery service and went full time into crypto. I've always been very excited about financial markets. When I was in high school, I started a small hedge fund, which was just friends and family's capital, and we'd trade CFDs, and the returns were pretty good.
Okay, so you struck out with this business. You've got a couple of co-founders in this business. Who are they?
Yeah, so I started the business in like mid-2017, and then a few friends of mine from varsity were also very into crypto, very interested in the topic. And they just graduated from electrical engineering and the other from actuarial science. They've been in crypto for about probably 2013, very involved, actively trading. They've accumulated some Bitcoin over the years, and they came on board around the time that I started the company.
Okay. And who are they? What are their names?
So our chief product officer, his name's Tom Massagiada. Mm-hmm. He's the actuarial scientist. He also obviously helps out in other aspects of the business. And then our chief technology officer, Nikar Ramchandra, who studied electrical engineering with me.
All right. Okay. And how's the business been funded to date? I believe you've been through one or two funding rounds already.
Yeah. So we've closed two official funding rounds. The initial capital came from myself, co-founder, friends and family. Mm-hmm. We used that to get to the first product. So we had a full working exchange in 2017. And we went to pitch Vinnie and Lou at Newtown Partners on the product, and Lou was pretty much sold immediately. Took about 2 or 3 months to close that round. The initial plan, we were doing an ICO, and we spent a lot of time doing market research and speaking to a whole lot of projects, because the initial exchange idea was going to be a self-governing exchange where anyone could come list a token and it would be completely self-governed. But once the token market took a bit of a slump, we decided that, and at the same time, there was always an opportunity for an altcoin exchange in South Africa. South Africa only really had one altcoin exchange at the time. In our opinion, it wasn't very good. There wasn't that many options. The UX wasn't quite there. So we thought that there was a real need in the market for an altcoin exchange in South Africa. And that's when we came out with the OVEX.
So altcoins are basically all cryptocurrencies that aren't Bitcoin. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. You decided to focus on that particular space in the market. And Bitcoin is the big daddy of cryptocurrencies, obviously. I think its market capitalization makes up something like 70% of the total crypto market.
Yeah, the dominance is very high right now.
Yeah.
And same with the volume. So you'll see between 80 to 90% of our volume is actually on the Bitcoin Czar market.
Mm-hmm.
But we find a lot of people come to OVEX for the altcoins and then trade the Bitcoin. They also for what I believe to be a superior UX to anything else that's available right now.
Okay. So why, as a matter of interest, should South African consumers or South Africans interested in investing in cryptocurrencies be considering altcoins as opposed to Bitcoins? What is the value in considering an alternative cryptocurrency?
So the altcoins obviously offer a much higher potential for returns. So that's why an investor would look at the altcoin market as opposed to Bitcoin. But there's, in terms of utility and use case, there's a lot of utility that come out of altcoins that aren't offered by Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, Bitcoin is a payment protocol.
Please be considering altcoins as opposed to Bitcoins. What is the value in...
Oh, sorry about that.
Okay, so I thought that was my side.
So Bitcoin, for example, is a payment token. It was invented by Satoshi in his white paper. He calls it a peer-to-peer payment network. But what Bitcoin's become is more of a store of value.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin is a way to hold your funds. If you want to transfer it, it takes about half an hour. It's a bit expensive. It's not ideal.
Yes.
So Bitcoin serves the purpose of a store of value. That basically creates a new coin. And that coin has very low transaction fees. And it's an interesting experiment, although there definitely are some shortfalls there. So you can see there's two different use cases, store of value on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And then you have peer-to-peer payments on Bitcoin Cash. And then you have smart contract and distributed app platforms, such as Ethereum. So this is something completely different. And this could be seen as almost a commodity. So this provides a completely new use case. One of the biggest use cases was creating tokens on Ethereum. So anyone could now create a cryptocurrency in a matter of minutes on Ethereum, and that obviously caused the ICO craze. And there's a lot of very interesting things that you can do with smart contracts. For example, two people from other ends of the world could take a bet on the soccer without having to have an intermediary, and they can know that whatever the outcome of the soccer is, the right person will get paid purely by the code that is in the software. And yeah.
Okay. But as an investment vehicle, I mean, people, I think South Africans are mainly buying cryptocurrencies to try and make a return from them. Everyone looks at Bitcoin, and you said that, you know, the vast majority of your volumes on OVEX are Bitcoin Czar. Are people looking at these altcoins as a potential store of value? Are they buying them and holding them?
Yeah, so I think they're more speculating on them. So it wouldn't be a very good store of value, an altcoin. Maybe some altcoins. So you have a stable coins, for example.
Yeah.
Those would be a very good store of value. So you have US dollar-backed stable coins such as Trust Token, the one that we partner with based out in San Francisco. So those would be great stores of value. And that's not going to change much. It's asset, meaning you hold the asset. There's no intermediary holding the asset. So there's that side. But most people are speculating. So buying an altcoin that is new, small community, very...
Jonathan, I lost you, but you seem to be back.
Okay, cool. Yeah, for example, we're listing a new altcoin called Zcoin, which Zcoin is basically it's a privacy coin, meaning that all transactions on the network are completely private. So this coin currently has a market cap of about $70 million compared to the biggest privacy coin, Monero, South African team, very good project, which has a market cap of, let me quickly have a look, but I believe
it's in the billions, isn't it? Or hundreds of millions.
Yeah, it was about 400 million last time I checked. Let's have a look. Yeah, 1.4 billion.
Wow.
So you can see the potential for growth there. So for these new altcoins.
Yeah. Of course, that's Ricardo Spagni's project. We had him on the podcast last year sometime. Good guy.
Yeah.
So, Jonathan, you're promising also to through OVEX to bring much lower fees to South Africans. I think you termed them when we had coffee recently, international level fees. There's quite a differential at the moment if you look at platforms like Luno, for example. Firstly, what's the reason for that differential when you're buying on a South African or selling on a South African exchange relative to an international exchange? What causes it? And what is OVEX doing to mitigate it?
Yeah, sure. So it's not necessarily fees, but it's there's a price differential between Bitcoin and crypto in South Africa compared to the international markets.
Okay.
And the price, so premium, is anywhere between 2% and 10%, which is quite crazy. And the reason for it is supply and demand. So the only way to get Bitcoin, if you're in South Africa, the only way to buy Bitcoin with rands is from another person who has Bitcoin and wants rands.
Mm.
But you have the option to convert your rands to dollars, and then you can go to the international market and buy Bitcoin, which is exactly what we offer. So you convert your rands to dollars, you go to the international market and buy Bitcoin with dollars, where it's more liquidity, there's much more people that hold the Bitcoin, they're willing to accept the dollars for it. So through that mechanism, you can get it at the international rates and a lot cheaper. But locally in South Africa, the only way to buy Bitcoin with rands is to find someone else who wants your rands for their Bitcoin. And in South Africa, people are valuing Bitcoin more than rands. It could be because there's some political uncertainty. You see the rand dropping 10% in the last 3 weeks. So a lot of people in South Africa are looking for maybe a hedge against the traditional financial market. And they're limited to buying just straight up dollars or an international investment by the capital control of 1 million rand per year. So anyone wants to invest 1 million rand per year outside of South Africa or in a rand hedge, Bitcoin is a great option.
Right. So what is it you guys are doing to get those costs down for local consumers? I believe you've partnered with a company in San Francisco called Trust Token.
Yeah, so we partnered with Trust Token. They're probably the third largest stablecoin.
Mm-hmm.
And they're based in San Francisco. And essentially what we have is the option for South Africans to use that discretionary allowance, that 1 million rand that they're allowed to send overseas every year. And through us, and we facilitate the whole thing. So they just deposit their rands, they complete the KYC, proof of address, AML requirements on our side. And then we facilitate the transaction of sending their rands overseas, buying the trust token. And from there, they're in the international market and they can buy any crypto they want using that TUSD. Which is a trust token coin, and they'll have purchased that trust token coin at the bank rate.
Right. And you obviously, as a South African, you can open an account on an international exchange, provided they accept South Africans, or allow South Africans to do that. But again, you make the point about Forex controls and the amount of money you're actually allowed to take out of South Africa. Are you actually seeing people investing so much in Bitcoin that those regulations become a barrier?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of our clients are doing way in excess of that 1 million rand per year.
Good grief.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
So, and you see on Luno, they're doing massive volumes on their Bitcoin ZAR market, about $6 million a day. It's about 60 million rand a day. So there's a lot of demand in South Africa for it. You know, South Africa has the biggest, the highest percentage of the population in the world that own Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So there's tremendous interest from South Africans in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. It also has the highest search for Bitcoin in the world.
That's fascinating. Why do you think that is?
I think it's the hedge. I'd say it's probably that South Africa's got a big economy. There's a lot of money in South Africa.
Yeah.
And there's also a lot of uncertainty in the political landscape. No one really knows it's stable, thank God, for now. But there's definitely uncertainty. So South Africans are looking to protect their hard-earned money and, their capital. Mm. That's why I think it's also a bit of speculation, but I'd say mostly used as a hedge.
Right. So it's, in effect, South Africans betting against the South African rand.
I'd say pretty much, yeah. Well, not betting against, but more like an insurance
hedging
policy.
Hedging against it, yeah. In case it continues to devalue it. Over the decades it has done so, I think it's probably fair to assume that it will continue to do so in the decades ahead.
Exactly, and I think the exact same thing happened in China recently. So recently Bitcoin ran from 9,000 to 12,000 in about a week. And I think that was probably due to the Chinese devaluing the RMB. So they devalued the RMB. It broke through the historic 7 mark. And I think a lot of the Chinese capital, there was a capital flight from China into Bitcoin, causing the pump.
So take us through how it works exactly. You've got this relationship with Trust Token. I'm interested in buying, say, an altcoin. I want to buy some Ripple, for example. And I come to OVEX with my RANDs. What's the process involved? I set up an account. I presume I go through some sort of KYC process. You then want to buy that Ripple. How just take me through the exact mechanism of making that purchase.
Yeah, sure. So there's two options. You can sign up with OVEX, put in your email address and password, and you can deposit RANDs via a local EFT and buy your Ripple, or you'd buy Bitcoin first and you buy your Ripple immediately. If you do that, you then pay the premium. So you pay the South African rate. Then option two is like you said, anyone could go create an account with an international exchange. They could figure out how to complete the KYC if it's not. They don't accept South African funds. They can figure out how to send the money overseas. But that's a cumbersome process. It's a mission. And frankly, you can see a lot of South Africans are by paying the premium. They'd rather pay the extra 5% than go through that mission. Yeah. So what we've done is we've streamlined this process to make it incredibly easy. So you come onto the exchange, you sign up. We're redoing this interface, and it should be live next week. But basically, you go to what we're calling the Invest Portal. And then you select purchase true USD. And then through there, you have to complete quite an extensive KYC process. We require an ID, passport, proof of address, and a selfie. Then there's a questionnaire, just basic KYC stuff. What's your address, monthly income, marital status? From there, it takes probably about 2 days for your account to be verified. And at that point, you make a local EFT to OVEX. Mm-hmm. And then you accept the international wire transfer. You accept the fact that you're sending money overseas. You're using your discretionary allowance and all that. And it's pretty much just the click of a button. And we do a SWIFT transfer on your behalf to our international partner. SWIFT as well takes anywhere between 1 to 2 days. SWIFT is the legacy banking infrastructure for international transfers. Once the funds arrive at TrueUSD, they immediately allocate it to your OVEX account. And you're free to do whatever you want with it. We're working on a product where you can actually choose to buy an altcoin as well. So right now it's TrueUSD is the only coin you can buy.
Okay.
At the international rates. We're working on a service where you can actually buy an altcoin at international rates as well. Right now, once you get the TrueUSD, it's as simple as another click to convert that to any altcoin on OVEX.
Now, when we spoke a few weeks ago, you and forgive me, I may be forgetting some of the detail here, but you spoke about the possibility of OVEX launching or being involved in the launch of a RAND-based stablecoin. Is that on the cards? What is your thinking around that? Why do it?
Yeah, so we think that it's an opportunity for a RAND-based stablecoin, mostly for trading at the moment. So we've spoken a bit to TrueUSD about this, and we've spoken to some local banks. The biggest hurdle is the banking infrastructure is getting over that. I think the opportunity is right now is for international trading. Mm-hmm. So you can have a RAND-based stablecoin trading on one of the top exchanges. That should, in theory, bring the arbitrage down a lot because now you have very close proximity to those international prices. Maybe you have some internationals speculating on the RAND price and purchasing Bitcoin. There's other big benefits, obviously, to a RAND-based stablecoin as well, which is obviously that peer-to-peer payment. So once you have a RAND-based stablecoin, you basically have digital cash. So now I can buy the RAND-based stablecoin. I can send it to anyone of my friends. We don't even need to create the infrastructure for it because they can use one of the 100 ERC-20 wallets that already exist. So the infrastructure is there already. For people to the mobile apps, the custody solutions, even there's a lot of companies working on point of sale integrations for ERC-20 tokens. So we think there's a big opportunity in the future for transactions using a RAND-based stablecoin, maybe even business-to-business settlement. You can do instant business-to-business settlement in a matter of seconds for free on any amount of money. But the short-term goal would be for trading. We haven't taken any large, significant steps since I last spoke to you. We've been more focusing on overhauling this TrueUSD feature, We're also launching an arbitrage service. Not service, but it's a bot. So essentially, because of this premium that exists in South Africa, our customers can buy at international rates and sell at local rates. So we're working on a bot that we should release probably in the next 10 days. That basically you sign up as if you're buying True USD, you deposit, say, 50,000 Rand, and the bot will automatically purchase the True USD at international rates, buy Bitcoin for you, and sell it at local rates and make about a 7%. Depends on the arbitrage, but it can make anywhere between like 2 and 7% every time it does it. And you can do up to 1 million Rand a year using this bot. So we think this is an incredible opportunity for South Africans and for our clients. They can essentially make easily about 3-4% every week on that money.
But then it sounds like money for jam.
Yeah, it's crazy, but it actually is. So we've been focusing very heavily on that. And the stablecoin has taken a bit of a backseat. I'm very, very excited about the arbitrage product. And we also think it'll bring the price down for the rest of South Africa.
Yeah, I was about to say, that arbitrage won't stay long if someone's taking opportunity of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the reason people don't take it is because it's just a hassle.
Yes.
But this will again be that one-click solution.
Yeah, yeah. So I know you have launched, or you may be about to launch, an index fund token. Just take us through what that is exactly and what you guys are doing.
Yeah, sure. So an index fund token is a token that's backed by a basket of other tokens. So one of our investors, this is our most recent round, Invictus Capital. They started the first tokenized index fund, C20. They did an ICO for it in 2017. They raised about $40 million. At the heart of the market, the market cap of their token was about $140 million. And what that token is essentially it's the top 20 cryptocurrencies. So you buy one C20 and you immediately get exposure to the top 20 tokens. We're looking at doing a top 10, or Invictus recently launched C10, which is the top 10. And in partnership with them, or potentially as technology providers, we're going to launch a top 10 index fund as well, which we'll be launching through our Invest portal.
Okay.
So South Africans can come, or anyone actually can come and purchase. We're thinking the name is going to be OVX10, and immediately get exposure to the top 10 cryptocurrencies without ever having to worry about it. And it will be rebalanced on a weekly basis. So for example, if Bitcoin goes up 10 times and the rest of the coins are flat, so now most of the portfolio is Bitcoin, it'll be rebalanced. So there's always a fixed percentage of each coin in the basket.
Right. Okay. We had a company called Bitfund on here a few months ago. They do something quite similar, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay. But you guys are an exchange.
We're an exchange, which is our value added. Yeah. So,
yeah. But it's interesting. It's kind of, it kind of hedges your bets in a way, doesn't it? Are you likely to see better returns if you were to put it into an index fund like this as opposed to investing directly in Bitcoin?
Yeah. Well, it's different. So index funds are generally more stable. So the founder of the index fund, he has a famous saying that says, why look for the needle in the haystack when you can buy the whole haystack? So that's the idea. So you're not going to be able to use the needle, but you'll have it.
Yeah.
So the idea is that you get broader exposure, less volatility, and it's just a more passive investment. And historically, index funds do considerably outperform actively managed funds.
Right.
And they're very cheap to manage, so we don't have to charge a big management fee on the index fund.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are there costs associated with doing that weekly rebalancing?
Yeah, so there's a slight cost. Most of it's just automated. So it's not like you have to go figure out what to do. You know that, okay, we need to buy X amount of this currency, Y amount of that currency. The only cost is really trading costs. And because we're an exchange, obviously we can, we're going to see what we'll charge there, but probably like close to nothing. But the end user actually only pays. Sorry, wait. I forgot. The end user of the token fund only actually pays a yearly management fee. So the exchange costs are not felt by them.
Okay. As a matter of interest,
about 1%.
As a matter of interest, Jonathan, Bitcoin is obviously by far in the lead in terms of the most popular coins that are being traded on OVEX. What's the ranking of the next four?
Which are the next four? Well, by daily volume?
By volume or value.
Let me have a look. I can bring it up here. So I'm looking at our exchange on CoinMarketCap here, and I can see, so right now, funnily enough, Ethereum is actually our top traded coin.
Oh, above Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's very unusual.
Interesting.
There must have been a lot of people buying Ethereum. But so for us, it's the top market is Ethereum, Bitcoin, and then TUSD, mm-hmm. followed by EOS, and then basic attention token and Chainlink. And then Monero comes in at number 7 today. Okay. Obviously, on a daily basis, it's changing.
Mm, mm. Okay. It's been in the news quite a lot in the last month or two, I suppose. And that's, of course, Libra from Facebook. What's your view of Libra? Does it have the potential to become a widespread means of payment, which Facebook is clearly hoping it will be, and where Bitcoin clearly hasn't been successful? Is Libra good or bad in your view for the broader cryptocurrency world?
Yeah, I think it is. So I was actually recently on Business Day TV talking about Libra, and I think that it's really legitimized as the cryptocurrency industry. It says to the world, we're Facebook, one of the fangs, biggest, one of the probably the most influential company in the world, and we're making a serious move into cryptocurrency. That really says to people, look, there's something here, something's going on. Mm. Cryptocurrency is a real technology. It has the potential to change the world. And that's probably the best thing that Libra and Facebook are doing for cryptocurrency, is just that legitimization of the industry, of the technology. In terms of Libra being widely used, I think it will absolutely be the most widely used cryptocurrency if they're able to get it to market. So they're having a lot of issues with regulations. But once they get it to market, I mean, Facebook have 2 billion users. They'll just integrate it to all the apps. You see when Facebook rolled out the story feature on Instagram, the story feature was obviously a blatant ripoff from Snapchat, but the story feature on Instagram is now more widely used than Instagram. So Facebook have the scale to pull something like this off. And it's great for the crypto community because it also provides an on-ramp. So once you own Libra, it'll be very easy to come onto OVEX. You can onboard on OVEX for free. Right now you have to do a bank transfer, which is not as easy as doing a Libra transfer from WhatsApp. Take a couple of seconds. You buy Bitcoin and you get access to the other cryptocurrencies.
Have you been surprised at the political fight back against Facebook and Libra? I mean, it's been quite robust. I get the impression that some governments see cryptocurrency and Libra and Facebook as a threat to them. Are you surprised at how hard they've been pushing back, particularly in the US? And do you think that politicians have the potential to scupper this whole thing and potentially hurt the cryptocurrency market?
So I think it's important for the politicians, especially a company like Facebook. Mm. So a company that's our size and scale of Facebook could come in and take over the entire banking system and avoid essentially all banking regulations. So the politicians are saying, look, you want to come in here, you want to run a bank, you want to basically run a reserve bank, a central bank for the world, and you want to be excluded from the banking regulations. So I think it's good, the reaction that the lawmakers have had towards Facebook. I think that if Facebook does get it to market, it must be highly regulated. They mustn't be able to do whatever they please.
Yeah.
Additionally, I think lawmakers obviously are very threatened by it in terms of the monopoly they have on issuing currencies. I mean, when Facebook announced Libra, Bitcoin was everything. There was the hearing on Capitol Hill. We had Steve Mnuchin coming out talking about Bitcoin. We had Donald Trump tweeting about Bitcoin. So you can see that that Libra definitely showed the world that Bitcoin cryptocurrency is real. But you also see what they were saying. Steve Mnuchin says he doesn't think Bitcoin will be around in 5 years. Donald Trump saying he doesn't think it's a real currency. So the politicians, the story is still the same, but at least now they are noticing it. And I think it is good that they're scrutinizing Libra and Facebook specifically.
Is it good that there's more regulation in the space, that regulators are paying attention to the crypto world? Or do you think that there's a risk that too much regulation is actually going to choke things off?
Yeah, so too much regulation is definitely a bad thing. But the cryptocurrency space is in need of regulation. I mean, you see in what happened with the ICOs. Basically, people issuing unregulated securities a lot of the time, which is obviously very bad. We have a lot of market manipulation a lot of the time. Mm. A lot of, for example, BitMEX, the world's biggest crypto futures exchange, requires almost no KYC. Things like that are a bit worrying. So I think I welcome regulation. I think it's very important. But at the same time, I hope that the lawmakers are careful not to stifle innovation and don't drive the people doing the innovation out of the country. And South Africa has been very good about it. So the Reserve Bank have been paying very, very close attention to Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. They know what's plotting. They're watching it. And they're not implementing unnecessary laws to restrict it at the moment.
At the moment. just before we move on from Libra, I mean, you say it's got the potential to become a means of daily transactions. Bitcoin was meant to be that originally. Do you think Bitcoin will ever be that? Will it ever be used by people to buy a cup of coffee or to buy something on OLX or that sort of thing?
I think it'll be used in that sense, maybe as a novelty. Mm-hmm. But not necessarily. It's not designed. It's the way the Bitcoin Core developers are taking it.
Yeah.
It's not designed to do that. I mean, it takes about half an hour to do a transaction, so it's not ideal. They're working on layer two solutions, what they're calling it.
Yeah.
But even so, the economics of Bitcoin make it also unattractive to buy a cup of coffee. For example, we have the famous $10 million pizza.
Yes.
The guy who bought the first Bitcoin transaction spent what's worth $10 million now on a pizza.
Most expensive pizza in history.
Yeah, exactly. By far. So I think a lot of people don't want to spend their Bitcoin on goods and services because
the value is always going up.
Yeah, exactly. The reason they own it is because it's going up. The reason they own it, they want to store their wealth there. It's not really to transact with it.
Yeah. If it's not a means of transacting, then what's the value of Bitcoin? How does it get value?
So the value of Bitcoin is a store of value. So you can say the same thing about gold. What's the value of gold? I mean, people say, yeah, we make jewelry out of gold, we make computer components out of gold. But that's, in reality, not even 0.001% of the world's total traded gold supply is used in actual goods. About a large, I forget the actual percentage, but I think it's somewhere around 90% of the gold that's traded on a daily basis are just derivatives of gold. So there's no actually underlying gold. Mm-hmm. For 90% of the supply. So this is just people basically with contracts between each other saying, okay, I now own this gold. If it goes up, I'm going to pay you X, you're going to pay me Y. Mm-hmm. So the store of value is what gives it value. And Bitcoin is far superior to gold in that way, in the sense that you can hold your own Bitcoin. Say you want to hold, I don't know, $10 million of gold, or say you want to transport $10 million of gold.
Yeah,
that's going to cost you an absolute fortune to send $10 million of gold around the country. Whereas with Bitcoin, you can memorize your secret phrase and you can cross a border with $10 million of Bitcoin in your head. Mm. So Bitcoin can be seen as well as a private bank, a Swiss bank account in your pocket, completely free.
And there'll only ever be a limited supply of them, unlike fiat currencies where governments can just print more of it.
Gold is scarce compared to fiat currencies, very scarce.
Yes.
But the thing is, gold is people are finding new gold all the time. Apparently, there's like a massive supply of gold under the ocean. You have these new companies that are mining meteors. So the gold supply can always increase, whereas the Bitcoin supply, once it is 21 million, that is it. Mm.
So Bitcoin is potentially a better store of value than gold.
A much better store of value, I would argue. Mm. In terms of its utility and functionality, it's a much better store of value as well. Mm.
Let's talk a little bit about security, because I think that's clearly a worry for many investors. Over the years, we've seen these headlines about hacks of global exchanges and millions or hundreds of millions even of dollars worth of cryptocurrencies being stolen. How do you make sure that doesn't happen to OVEX and its clients?
Yeah, absolutely. So security is the absolute highest priority at OVEX. Mm. So what we do to secure our funds is we hold 100% of our users' funds offline.
Okay.
So In the historically, the only hacks that have, all hacks historically have been on exchanges that have hot wallets. Hot wallets mean that the exchange system has a large wallet that it can control for instant withdrawal. So a user comes, they submit a withdrawal, the system says, okay, Duncan's withdrawn one Bitcoin and sends it out to him. Mm-hmm. So hackers gain access to this hot wallet and drain the entire balance. And that's the biggest risk. And all those hacks that have happened in the past have all been hot wallet attacks.
Right.
So what we do is we don't have a hot wallet at all. We keep 100% of our funds offline. This means that even if an attacker gained access to our system, they couldn't steal anything. They could just wreak havoc with our database values and things like that, which we keep a very, very robust data backup mm-hmm. regime, which means we can roll back to any second of our database within the last week. So if that were to happen, we'd just roll back. And the obvious drawback to having a cold wallet is that once a user submits a withdrawal, it doesn't get processed immediately. So we process withdrawals twice a day, and every withdrawal has to be signed by three parties: the user withdrawing the funds, a partner at OVEX, and a third party custodian when we batch them twice a day. So mm-hmm. that's how we protect the funds. Obviously, there's the drawback of having to only access your funds twice a day. But we think that the increased security is definitely worth it.
Yeah, I suppose it'd be a drawback for someone who's actively trading all day long. But for people who are investing for the longer term and aren't active day traders in cryptocurrencies, it's not an issue.
Exactly. And it's also really only an issue for people that are trading between multiple exchanges. So it's only a problem for you if you need to withdraw your funds from OVEX to another exchange mm-hmm. immediately to take advantage of some arbitrage between exchanges, for example. So that's where the biggest drawback is.
Okay. I believe your ultimate goal, though, is to build a decentralized exchange so users can trade directly with each other, and that eventually you'd like to not to hold clients' funds at all. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually another key use case for the stablecoin. So eventually, when the technology is there, we'd like to have a completely decentralized exchange, which means that it would be built on one of those DApp platforms, like I mentioned earlier, something like Ethereum or EOS, which is one we've been looking at. Where essentially, we don't own the infrastructure. We don't manage the infrastructure. We just built the infrastructure, we wrote the code, and we put it out there. And users come and they'll exchange directly with each other mm-hmm. From my wallet to your wallet. And that is obviously the ultimate goal for us.
But you say the technology is not ready for that today. What is the issue?
So the issue is speed. So when you work on a decentralized platform, you have to reach consensus between, let's say on EOS, for example, there's 21 computers. Okay. So every trade has to go through 21 different computers before the system says, okay, this is the value. Every computer operation has to be propagated across the network. Of EOS, it's 21. Ethereum, it's all the miners, which are hundreds. Ethereum is very, very slow. Meaning if you were to do a trade on Ethereum, so there are decentralized exchanges. Your trade on there can take anywhere between 1 to 10 seconds, which is just far too slow.
Yeah.
On OVEX, it will take a millisecond, a thousandth of a second. So that's right. A 10,000 times performance improvement, which we don't think people want the trade-off at the moment. We don't think and that's also just a terrible user experience. I mean, you want to sell your Bitcoin now, not in 10 seconds time when the price has changed.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. You're focused on the South African market now, Jonathan. Do you have plans to expand internationally? I think you mentioned Malawi last time we spoke.
Yeah, so we're looking at some African countries to expand from a fiat perspective, which means, so fiat deposits and withdrawals. We're also looking at Australia to expand from a fiat perspective. One of our, a friend of the exchange, he's based in Malawi and runs a small OTC desk there. So we've been looking seriously at that market, and there's a small market there, but it's a good enough size market to get attention. But right now we are launching crypto to crypto internationally.
Okay.
So for example, we have a C20, which is our investors, the index fund that we spoke about, and that's only available to outside investors. It's not available to South Africans. And we're also adding some new coins that will be available on the crypto to crypto market. So it means Bitcoin, you trade Bitcoin for this. And that will also be available internationally and marketed internationally. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Before I let you go, we've obviously seen the launch of a lot of crypto exchanges in the recent past in South Africa. Do you think given the size of our market, that perhaps the market's becoming a little overtraded? Do you think there's room perhaps for some consolidation in this market, or is it too soon to be talking about that?
I think it's probably too soon. So there have been a lot of new exchanges that have come out. We were ready to launch in 2017, and I really wish that we had. But this year, there's been the entrance of a few new exchanges. Mm. I think that you still see Luno holding the lion's share of the market, and they're still not offering. They've got the highest fees, and they have the fewest options for users. I mean, they really are very, very vanilla exchange, mm. and they still have the lion's share. Mm-hmm. So I think that indicates that it's still very, very early in the. In South Africa. The South African market is also huge. I mean, about $6 million a day is traded on ZAR every single day. And that, because it's on ZAR, there's almost a 6% premium. So there's a lot of money to be made in South Africa still, for sure.
And is that volume or that value growing all the time? Or is it, what are the trends you've seen?
It's been pretty much constant since 2017. It hasn't.
Constant growth?
No, constant. Okay. It fluctuates around the same
figure.
Around the 6 million mark.
Okay.
There hasn't been significant growth in volume in South Africa.
Okay. Great. Long term, where do you see OVEX going? What do you want OVEX to be? Where do you see this business in 5 years' time, Jonathan?
So I want OVEX to be obviously the default exchange for every South African. I want OVEX to help South Africans invest as well, both passive and actively. We want to be an international crypto-to-crypto exchange, somewhere like everyone in the crypto community knows, somewhere everyone in the crypto community has used before. And ideally, hopefully the technology is there, maybe a decentralized exchange.
Great. Jonathan Ovadia. Am I pronouncing your surname correctly, by the way? Ovadia? Ovadia?
Yeah, Ovadia. Ovadia. Tomato, tomato.
I'll go with Ovadia. Jonathan Ovadia is CEO of OVEX. That was a really great discussion. Thanks so much for talking to Tech Central today, rather.
Thanks, Duncan. Yeah, it was great being here.